No. We have a chance to prove ourselves. Prove ourselves to the WWE Universe. Prove ourselves to the authority. And prove ourselves to them, the Bella Twins, that us divas, we are just as powerful and just as strong as them.
But ladies, it's a free country. I mean, please, it's a free country. So if you want to side with Paige, well, by all means, side with Paige.
This is an herbal box, okay?
Oh, Bunny Paige goes on. Well, it looks like it is.
Oh, Paige. Paige, woman on an island, surrounded by a bunch of performers far less talented than her who are unwilling. Oh, I'm sorry. Are we starting the show now? Welcome, everyone, to a special later week edition of As the Heel Turns, which is means we're going to be covering, you know, a broader range of topics, which I think is good. Joining me, as always, the most handsome man in the pro wrestling podcast world, Connor Dorian.
Hello, Alex. How are you today?
And
I just want to, sorry, before you introduce our next guy, I want to point out to our fans and our listeners that I was voted the most beautiful man in wrestling podcasts, but second place, your host, Alexander Kaylee.
And honorable mention, star of several podcasts.
To me, that sounded like a snub.
Dario Passarelli.
That was definitely a snub in my direction.
We don't do that here.
But I'm okay. I'm okay. And
well, we
got to
fight the heel,
no,
man.
No. You know what? And I was going to have a bone to pick with the host, but now I'm going to have it with you. Connor. But I do have a bone to pick with you.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you always introduce Connor first.
Yep.
And it goes, the adage goes, no, it doesn't. The adage says, age before beauty. And so if you are the most beautiful, which, by the way, it wasn't a unanimous decision because the voting was 2-1.
And the two votes were me and my girlfriend.
Yeah. Well, no, Alex actually does go in your favor. Alex did vote in your favor. But like I said, it's age before beauty, which means that should be me.
I just go alphabetical. First name and last name. Well, either way, you're trumped.
You will be first next week, Dario, because I will not be here.
Well, we'll see if I'll be here.
And I'm your host, Alexander Big Al Lee. I didn't even... Alexander K. Lee.
I kind of introduced you.
Oh, you did. Thanks, Connor. Yeah. It's nice to be introduced for once.
Yeah, it's nice.
Let's start jumping right into it with our talk of the Divas Division. You know, that final
lack
thing.
Thereof.
Or lack thereof. I think this is a topic a lot of fans like to talk about, and there's some very obvious, though I think not necessarily ideal, solutions. But Pop, let's go with you right away. What are some of the problems that we have, or like you said, don't have because it doesn't exist?
Well, I think you just quite simply go into the situation where either you have a face to cheer for or a heel to hate, or in some cases you have a heel to cheer for or a face to hate. John Cena was throwing that one in there. In the case of the Divas Division, I don't have a freaking clue. There's, you know, nobody stays in their role long enough for it to be defined as a role. You're supposed to like cheer for the Bellas that are face 1 week, and then they do a Bella Magic twin thing, and it's supposed to be like Paige is supposed to be now good, but everybody hates her because she's broken. I have no idea what's going on. I have no idea in terms of where they're trying to go with it. I have no idea who I'm supposed to... Their characters haven't been given any time to develop or stay in the same spot. They keep switching.
That reminds me, for those of you playing at home, Alicia Fox is a heel again, I believe. She's a heel this week. So I know everyone has their Alicia Fox board keeping track of her face and heel turns. She is now a heel again. Please update your Alicia Fox statuses accordingly.
Did you guys like that she was with the Bellas, dressed up as a Bella?
It's for the
show. Like, that's... It was too much for
Total
me.
Divas is coming back, so...
I think the two Bellas are enough. I think them separate are better than together.
I think one is enough.
One is enough?
None would be ideal. But
which
that's
one, Alex?
Really neither, if that's possible. I'm not a fan.
Well, I'm okay with them being there. Honestly, right now, I still don't know the difference between Nikki and Brie. Who's married to who?
I can tell you two differences.
are we getting back to Jerry Lawler and the puppies again?
Oh, we'll get to Mr. Well, no,
I mean
we'll get to the king later.
They did that because of the whole puppies thing, right?
Alicia Fox is now my favorite Bella twin. How about that? Is that okay? Is that
Bella triplet now?
Yeah.
But, you know, again, I think I don't mind what they're trying to do, at least what I think they're trying to do in terms of the storyline, which looks like it's leading up to, since Paige is not going to be able to get the support from the Divas at Raw.
And why would she want it from this current crop?
Well, she's betrayed everybody. Why would they want to help her?
Well, they're worthless.
Yeah. Then she's going to go to NXT, yes, her former stomping ground, and bring people up. So I'm okay with that. I don't like the fact that she wasn't on Raw Monday. Now I know why she wasn't on Raw Monday, because of Tough Enough. But, like, again, I don't think there's any thought being put into this, any long-term thought. I think it's last minute. Oh, by the way, why don't we throw a match with these two people now?
But I think it does have a long-term goal for it. I think it will last until Survivor Series. I hate to say it, but I don't think we're going to see NXT Divas until Survivor Series have the Bella Army versus the Paige Army in the traditional Survivor Series match.
And I'm fine with that. I actually want to, and let's just clarify what we're talking about here. Monday, a deplorable episode of Raw, had a particularly brutal Diva segment where the Bella Twins with Alicia Fox faced off with Tamina and Naomi.
Did you say deplorable because of Paige the whole show?
I was like, because Paige wasn't on it.
Okay. Well, see, yeah. I wasn't going to be that obvious, but okay. Yeah, okay. I knew you were going to go
there. No, it was a brutal show. But that segment was really bad, and really one of the reasons that we're saying, finally, let's talk about this, because as you guys have mentioned, the match was so pointless. I don't think the Bellas were supposed to be faces in that scenario, so this was essentially a heel versus heel match, which is very hard to do as it is with the best heels, much less a group of heels that, frankly, most people just do not care about.
They're trying to push Naomi as a face, though.
But they're not, because she was a heel just recently when she wrestled Nikki.
And
she
Tamina's
was the
heel
in that scenario. And
Tamina's never
so
been
actually
a face.
Yeah, Tamina's the heel.
Yeah.
And but I think they were trying to push Naomi as a face when when she was with the Usos.
They were, and then she turned on some random episode. Oh, she turned on Paige. She attacked Paige and then turned, which was confusing as
it
was.
Is that just because her husband's injured? Is it him that's injured, or is it...
And also, they're high on Paige. I think Naomi, excuse me. I think they like Naomi. She does bring some incredible athleticism, despite having absolutely no idea how to wrestle a match. And I think they like her a lot. And the heel turn was a good move. But then again, it just leads into this generic sort of, you know, versus Bella's action. And the match on Monday made no sense. The crowd could not get invested in it at all. It was brutal.
I'm beginning to wonder, seriously, if they're not there strictly to provide time for the audience to leave the arena and buy merchandise. Because I wouldn't say and sit through it. I mean, other than one match in the last, what, 3, 4, 5 months, the Divas has been decent to watch.
Yeah, Nikki and Paige at Money in the Bank was great.
Other than that, I'm off to go to the bathroom. I'm off to buy a popcorn. I'm off to go buy a Bella's t-shirt.
Make a phone
just
call.
Just kidding. Not a Bella's t-shirt.
Go make a phone call. Go check your stocks. Play some WWE Supercard.
Exactly.
You know, there's just so many other things you could be doing. Now, onto the NXT idea. Yes, I think the storyline, that's the most obvious solution to this storyline. I think there's a lot of problems to it. For one thing, the division is fundamentally flawed. You could throw in the most talented female wrestlers in the world in there. I don't think it's going to matter if they treat the division the same way as they have for years. Connor, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree with that. They don't have anybody that I can see that can carry this division at this moment. I think once they bring up, like, I don't even know if Charlotte can do it. Like, I would say she's the best diva that they have in the roster right now. You guys can disagree with me all you want, but I think if once she comes up, it'll be tough for her to make a name for herself there too, because there's no one that she can feud with, really.
For me, I just worry that we are putting so much hype on the NXT girls that they won't be able to match the expectation we put on it. And that's what I'm worried about. On the flip side, things are so bad right now that whatever they bring is probably going to be an improvement.
The thing is, as I was saying, fundamentally, the way they've booked Divas for years is wrong. If you suddenly put a 15-minute Divas match on TV, even if it's a great match, the crowd has not been conditioned. Like you said, they've been conditioned to treat Divas matches as a bathroom break, merchandise break, some sort of break, and that's so unfair. But that is the way. Like, do you think that they book the Bella Twins versus Naomi and Tamina because they think, oh, this is a great match? No, it's something for all four performers to do, and they know it's a way to fill up 10-12 minutes of airtime. And that can't be how you treat your performers, how you treat your talent. So if they bring up these NXT performers, it doesn't matter how good they are. If they're treated the same way, because Emma is really good. we like
She's
Emma.
She's a very good wrestler, yeah.
Good wrestler, great personality, good character.
I hate that thing with Santino she was doing.
I like
yeah,
that.
That's
like
gone now, though.
And it's gone now.
Thankfully.
But she's and now she's in a weird place. She's a heel on NXT, but now just sort of a generic babyface, nondescript character on Raw. And if that's what they're going to do with NXT women, it doesn't matter if they bring them up all at once. It'll be cool for a month, and then they'll just become diva stock again.
I have a question for you, Alex, though.
Please.
What is the difference between now the Divas Division and Divas Division back in the early 2000s, other than the superstars? Because obviously it was Lita, Trish, like they could wrestle, they were good. But what's the difference now? Like what?
Dario, go ahead.
I really want to know.
The difference that I saw between Lita and Trish as compared to what's going on right now, and this may be the only way to save it in terms of booking it, they had their own feud that was going on that was special, number one. But they were also involved in the WWE, not just the Divas Division.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Trish Stratus had many storylines.
Many.
Vince McMahon, Chris Jericho. Yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Triple H even. You know, why don't we see somebody else trying to get between Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, like a female trying to get in the middle there, or, you know, something along those lines. But they were involved with other storylines. So even though they may not have wrestled necessarily, they were front and center. That's how you build up their exposure, build up their character a bit more. And then once they finally got to the point where they put on a match, they did a phenomenal job wrestling.
And this is not to say that that era was like a golden age of women's wrestling. Obviously, there was a lot wrong with it. There was, you know, bra and panties matches and, you know, mud wrestling matches and things like that.
Sorry, you said that there's something wrong with that?
Yeah, I'm just saying, confused with that too, Alex.
I'm just saying, you know, I don't want it to sound like, oh, well, they used to treat the division with so much more respect. Because
there was definitely sexism, but
yeah.
We've had many of this discussion.
Yes, even to this day. And the thing is, in this business, in wrestling, frankly, in the world of entertainment, there always will be. I'm not saying that's the way it should be, and, you know, someday let's fix that, right? But the way it is now, there always will be. But you can still treat the division in a different, you know, in a different light, treat it with more respect, and I'd like to see them do that now. That said, I'm somewhat avoiding a larger issue that we have touched upon many times, and that's on the show, we have the problem of how far do you go talking about a performer's appearance? And I think that goes for men or women, though obviously it's a bigger issue with the female wrestlers. Is this correct?
Bigger?
A bigger issue. Is this correct? Dario.
You know, and I think one of the things that I'm actually curious of, because we've approached the subject before, we say it's part of it, but we're men, and we tend to look at things differently than women. You know, I'd be curious, next time we go see a Smash Wrestling event, why don't we ask?
Who?
Why don't we ask Candice LeMay? Why don't we ask Veda Scott? Why don't we ask Portia Perez? Why don't we ask them and say, hey, how do you feel about this? Because, I mean, we don't pick their outfits. And do you think that they choose their outfits because it helps them wrestle better?
But you can say the same thing about the men.
Or because it helps them define a persona, define their sexism, define their whatever.
I think, I don't know if they technically want to be objectified like that, but they're definitely bringing it upon themselves with the costumes that they wear. They have, like, the picture that I bought of Candice last week, she has her shirt on, but then there's, like, a cutout right on her breast. So, obviously, they're bringing attention to that, and that's how they bring the male 18 to 35 testosterone-filled guys to the arena.
I agree with everything you said. I just very hesitant to say they bring it upon themselves.
No.
I think it's like, you know, they feel that maybe they have to succeed in this business. There's a bit of a difference there.
I think here's the thing, though, and here's why I don't have an issue with scantily clad ladies in professional wrestling, because because the men wear less than the women. Now, are they objectified the same way? No, not necessarily. Of course not. You don't see WWE releasing calendar, you know, back in the day, releasing calendars and photo shoots,
videos,
magazines of the guys, right? So in that sense, there's a different level of objectification. However, I'm sorry, I was going to say the other problem is that men are allowed to succeed in the business with different body types. In the WWE, all the women have the same body type. And that's fine. I'm glad they promote a
there
fit,
is,
you know,
there
image,
is
but
rare occasions. I'm going to say, like, Awesome Kong,
yeah.
for example. In WCW, no, TNA, this is the beer drinking, whiskey guzzling.
ODB, one. I can't stand her.
ODB, I can't stand her either.
Cannot
but again, slightly
you're right.
different type
yes.
of body. So there are a few, but you're right. I mean, yeah. the majority of them are people you would not
right.
kick
Why?
Out of the bed for eating crumbs.
Sure, of course. Why shouldn't the women's
eating
roster
crumbs.
Dropping
eating
crumbs?
You've done it before. Eating crumbs is just like, it's just, get out of here.
Just get out of here. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
It.
I kicked them all up.
Why can't the women's roster be as diverse physically as the men's roster? I just don't understand. And there are a lot of good women wrestlers out there who have different body types in the indies. Shout out to, there's this tall Amazonian woman named Andrea, who I don't know if you know her. She used to be, she made an appearance in TNA as, I want to say Rosie Lotta Love. She was playing this sort of plus size burlesque woman.
Understood.
And she was kind of untrained back then, so unfortunately she ended up hurting some people and went away from the business for a while. But she came back. She lost what looks to be about 100-plus pounds. She's in phenomenal shape now. She's a tall woman. I think the WWE will scoop her up again at some point. I shouldn't say again, for the first time at some point. So watch out for her. But there's other girls out there. Why can't the WWE pursue that?
My opinion on it, like going back to what I said before, the body type that they have right now, that is only to bring guys into the seats. But just let me finish.
Go ahead. Sir.
Saying that, there is a lot of divas that are role models to young women, and they are not promoting that as much as they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the problems with the divas division right now.
I think the answer has nothing to do with what you think it does. Let me ask you and flip it around. If you give the male wrestlers only 3.5 minutes a night on Raw, how many of the oversized wrestlers do you think you'll be? Or are you going to have those Paul Orndorffs that are built solidly and wonderful? You're going to have 6, 7, 8 wrestlers. I guarantee you a lot of them are going to be better looking than the average Bray Wyatt.
Saying
if
that, I remember a match a few weeks ago, Harper and Rowan, they had like a minute-long match, and they're not the best guys to look at. So there is exceptions to that in the guys' division. The Divas definitely not.
Here's what they need to do beyond bringing up the talent. My other issue with bringing up NXT talent is I don't want to leave the NXT covered bare, because let's say you brought up Charlotte, Sasha, Bayley, maybe bring Emma back up again as part of this faction, which I hope they would do if they decided to do an
is
NXT
she
faction.
Even down?
She does both. Yeah,
yeah,
she does both. But if they bring up an NXT faction, I'd like them to include her, because I still think she has so much to offer. But if you, after a while, they would probably still make appearances in NXT, but after a while, you know, eventually they would become, like Kevin Owens is going to become, you know, Raw and SmackDown only talent, main show talent. That leaves a lot of unproven girls down at NXT. Alexa Bliss, who you know I love, but I would say is the Bruno Caboclo 2 years from being 2 years away.
Toronto reference.
Some of the girls they signed recently, these Australian talents, are phenomenal, and they've had a lot of experience. But I'd like to, there's like Jessie McKay, Casey Cassidy, but I'd like to see them have at least 6 to 8 more months of seasoning and not have to carry a program like NXT. So they have to be careful about raiding the farm system, as it were.
You said Australian?
Yes.
Oh, damn it. Because we keep talking, referring about, you know, the physical attractiveness of these stars, an Australian accent. Oh, that's going to do it for me.
Yeah. Man. Hey, Paige.
What about Emma? Has Emma done it for you?
Boy. When they let her talk, yeah. She's great. But there's a lot of talent down there. But, it's the ongoing thing with NXT is, like, they have to be careful. There's always, you know, balancing treating it as a cool kind of sideshow and as a developmental system. So maybe it would be good if they brought up, you know, the big names so that they could become developmental again. But do fans have a taste for that anymore? I don't know. I like the idea of the NXT invasion. Especially in the Divas division, I just don't think it solves the problem right away. There's so much systematically wrong with how WWE treats. Like you said, they need to gradually give them more match time, right? That would be
Or gradually integrate them, not so much in their own matches, but be involved in things that are going outside as well.
Rusev, Lana.
Exactly.
So good. So good. What kind of... Do you have any examples of think of guys in the main roster right now who are kind of listless, don't have anything going on. I mean, what do you think? How would you pair them? Do you have any ideas for how to pair them up? Any storylines?
Oh, I'm not. No, I don't even think in terms of pairing them off with people that don't have anything. I'm talking about injecting them. The one great thing about what happened back in the heyday of Trish Stratus and Lita was that they were involved in main event matches. Not so much the match itself, but like I said, they would be at ringside. They would be involved in storylines throughout the three-hour Raw package that did lead up to a main event. So they were part of the bigger picture, not just their own storyline that was going through. And I think that's something that needs to happen. Whether the NXT come up and Paige brings it up, and now they're not only fighting the Bellas, but maybe they're also fighting the Authority, because maybe the Authority doesn't want them to come up, kind of thing.
That'd be good.
So it's like a two-pronged attack, so to speak. And that's how you get them involved. That's how you make them interested by the public, to get a bit more of that TV time, to help build their characters, to then be able to put on longer matches and have people be interested in it and not go out and buy things during their match.
Yeah, it's a slow process. It's not. There's no quick fix. I hope people don't think there's a quick fix. It could take years before the Divas division becomes a draw again.
No,
it's
not
taking years.
Not years.
Oh, I think so.
It's already taking years.
No, I don't think it'll take years. I think they can do it within a year quite easily.
I have an idea. Just for one female. Though.
I was wondering why there was steam. I was wondering why there was steam coming out of your ears.
No,
okay.
Right? That's just the tea I'm brewing behind my head.
Never mind.
I know it's hard to bring someone only to the main roster before coming to NXT, but if I find a girl that can come right to WWE, I would like to put her with Bray Wyatt as Sister Abigail.
That would be creepy. Good. It would have to be the right performer.
Yeah. That was just my idea I just came up with.
I like that. There was rumors for a long time that when they were going to bring Paige up, that's what she was going to do. I'm kind of glad they didn't.
Yeah.
But it would have been interesting.
I think Paige would have worked. Definitely don't see a blonde being as a Sister Abigail.
Could be.
Has to
be
white hair.
No, but you know, you could kind of play against type. That's how you wouldn't suspect it, right?
Sure.
I don't know. Look, I just wish, you know, this is one of many wishes we have for WWE Creative to just be outside the box and to just take chances and try and do interesting things instead of the same thing every week, you know?
Okay. I'm just looking at how long we've been on this segment. We've talked about Divas for well over 20 minutes. That is like 7 episodes or 7 weeks of Raw.
Yeah.
Just now we've had
the
equivalent thereof.
And I would bet they don't put even this much time into planning these segments.
I agree.
Forget the segment that actually ends up on television. They don't take that much time planning it.
Half a cup of coffee lasts longer.
But let's ask this real question then. But can it actually be a draw again? Can it be a draw like you mentioned Trish and Lita, and I was just looking this up. If I remember correctly, and I think this is still the only time, Trish Stratus and Lita, a women's title match, main evented a Raw.
Main evented a Raw.
And it was a great, great match.
That's the pinnacle of women's wrestling, period.
Can you imagine any of these divas main eventing Raw? Even pick your two favorite divas, and I bet they still wouldn't. Like I like Paige and Layla. I would never imagine them main eventing Raw under any circumstances.
Paige and Layla.
I like Layla a lot.
The only way I see that happening, bring out the bra and panties again.
Oh,
because
no.
It's only way it's going to be a gimmick match.
You know what? That reminds me, we were going to talk about
hair versus hair.
An influential man on the Divas division.
How did Alex go from bra and panties to influential man? I'm waiting
Buddy,
to see
I
this.
I got some stuff going on that I don't want people to know about. That's all I'm going to say. Jerry the King Lawler. The originator, I want to say the originator, or at least the man who popularized referring to women's breasts as puppies.
We got to laugh in the peanut gallery.
Go ahead.
I'm not saying anything. He did.
You're like me. Surely you are outraged that this nonsense, that we still get, in the year of our Lord 2015, still get puppies chants.
Is... this is going to be difficult, but can I still be outraged even though I laughed hysterically every time you said it?
But it's almost, you're laughing at him at this point. It's almost sad. Is that fair to say?
Does it make me look better if I say I was laughing at him?
Yes.
Then yes,
okay,
yes.
Great.
Bye. I was laughing at Jerry the King Lawler for using puppies.
See, I had a different perspective than you guys at that point because I was only... 12, 13 years old at the time. So when he said puppies, I laughed and laughed.
It was funny. And I hate to be disrespectful to some of the divas from that era, but they were very much non-wrestlers and models, and especially during that era when they were allowed to show off a lot of skin. It was almost, if anything, him saying puppies was the least offensive, you know, part of what was going on.
All right, no, you say bra, at least it wasn't painted on.
Yes, like one Sable, right? So it was, you know, it was almost charming and funny once upon a time. Maybe women viewers would disagree, and that's totally understandable. But now the fact that it still pervades, even though we have women who are actually talented and can wrestle and can talk and cut promos just like any of the men, it's troublesome that it exists and that culture still exists.
Well, I just have to say that we keep bringing this up, but failed to mention and give respect to the WWE because they also did the flip side. I've received a mental projection. My other podcast that I do with my friend Joe the Franchise Nursa.
So in tune. It's scary.
We are. And that's why that podcast is as good as this one, if not better.
Number one.
Ooh.
It's the number one podcast.
Ooh. Oh, come on. It started first.
We'll get there. It's number one.
First.
It's the top podcast.
And, you know, the thought that said, and I'm not going to forgive him for this either, for putting that mental image, but as much as WWE portrays, you know, the sexual and, you know, like I said, rather than brawn panties out of paint, they also threw things at us like Mula and May. Ugh. And the sexual chocolate storyline and
Big D Johnson.
Oh.
Big D Johnson, remember? Was his name?
See, I told you he would remember the name.
The ex guy?
Connor and I were talking about it earlier, about the male stripper in front of Mr. McMahon. And,
and
I go, I can't remember his name. I go, but I bet you Alex does.
Of course, it's burning my brain.
And of course, but
and the poster on my wall as well.
With Mrs. May and that whole storyline, that was just like, oh, Mark Henry sexual chocolate baby and the hand.
They need to bring back sexual chocolate. Huh? They need to bring him back.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
Nobody needs to see that anymore.
So they do the flip side of it as well, but not as much.
Eat the Godfather, too.
Bring back the Godfather. The fact that he was actually back at a Rumble shocked me, that character would come back, considering how hard they push PG now and like how much they're trying to clean up their image. I'm like, this man's a pimp. He might be a friendly, he might be a friendly neighborhood pimp, but he's a pimp. And that ain't PG.
But that also was one of the highlights of Raw's when I was watching back then.
Again, there was
beep train coming out.
Look, maybe we were just all more immature. I don't know, but it did feel like there was almost a cartoonish charm to some of these things. Right? Is that fair to say? Like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was just as offensive back then as it would be now. You know, maybe we're more politically correct. I don't know, but there was something harmless about it, right? There was something harmless, and there was something. Maybe I was just a child. I don't know.
No, I think what it boils down to, and we can talk about it till we're blue in the face. The bottom line is, until female wrestlers come back and tell us how they feel, doesn't matter.
That would suggest that opinions outside of this booth like matter more than ours, and that sounds crazy to me. I don't know if I'm ready to
No, and let me correct you again, because the fans that listen to their opinions matter to us.
That statement confused me, but you're right.
People that listen.
Yes.
So it's just more than just the three of us. It's
all
of us together.
Oh.
And their opinion matters to us. So I'm just saying that there are more people's opinion than the three of us.
Sometimes I forget other people actually listen to this show.
No, they do. They do quite well. And
thank
I just
you.
Want to encourage
thank
it.
You.
Hey, Connor, you think they bought that?
I hope so.
Okay. Yeah. I sounded genuine, did
yeah,
I not?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Now, one highlight of the Divas division, I always mention it, Paige, I think. She's phenomenal. I think she's, you know, when the Divas division someday improves, I think she will still be at the head of it. But she was absent from Raw because she's heavily involved in the return of WWE Tough Enough. Now, unfortunately, Pop and I have not had a chance. The schedules this week has been a bit funny.
I'm not sure if we can use the word unfortunate just yet. I'm not
right.
necessarily
Connor,
looking forward to it.
Connor will be the judge of that.
Yes.
Pop and I have been unable to see the episode so far. We are planning to watch it every week, and since we record on Tuesdays, we'll have sort of a preview of the upcoming episode while talking about last week's episode. For now, Connor, you're the only one who's watched the first episode. What are some of your initial thoughts? Contestants who stood out?
Initial thoughts. I thought it was going to be more wrestling stuff. The first couple challenges were all just physical challenges, which I did not enjoy whatsoever.
Give us an example of one of them.
The first one was they had to run across the football field with a parachute on the back, and then they had to do another task, and then they had to run up the stadium steps to the top, which I thought was, have an endurance test, but don't have it all endurance test. The one guy that stuck out to me, he was basically the only guy that really stuck out to me, was a guy named Tanner, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Saracino, I don't know what his last name is. He was the only guy that had any sort of charisma. And he was definitely going to be a heel once he comes up, because he was, I'm the best, no one can touch me, I'm going to do double everyone else. And it really stuck out to me. He was the only really person that stuck out to me. There's another guy, ZZ is his name. He is a really big guy, and he's only 18 years old. And he came dead last in both competitions. And he still didn't get voted out. Because he likes to think himself that he's funny. He's not that funny. He sat in the hot tub in the barracks, that they call it, their residence, I guess. He sat in the hot tub. All the girls got in. He took off his pants and was naked in the hot tub, scared everyone off. Yeah, he looked at me with that blank stare. It was weird. So, yeah, it was bottom three. It was him, Joshua, who looks almost exactly like Roman Reigns. Hopefully he's better. And who's the guy? Hank. Hank Avery,
yeah, I'm looking here, yeah.
Jr. They were the bottom three. Hank was eliminated because he didn't really do anything. He was just kind of there. He was middle of the pack, didn't really say much.
Was he featured in the episode at all? Or
not really, no.
So when he was eliminated, were you like, who's this guy? Like,
who? Yeah, really.
Oh, I hate when
there was a, like, the only people that really stuck out to me was Tanner, the guy that looks like Roman Reigns just because he looks like Roman Reigns. A girl named Gabby, who was just kind of the bee with an itch on the show. I don't know if I can say that word.
Yeah, no, that's okay.
And then there's another girl, Diana. She
Diana
is
Diana Dahlgren.
Yes, Diana Dahlgren. She is engaged, or I think she's engaged. Yeah, and her husband or her fiance came and saw her, and she started crying and saying she wanted to go home on like the first day. And then Gabby just kind of told her off, which she should have done. So my two front runners right now, Gabby and Tanner, they haven't really done anything on the show yet. So yeah, there you go. A little recap.
I'm not going to lie. I'm right now looking up pictures of Gabby and Diana strictly for the sake of the show. So I, you know.
My question was more along, like, back to the challenges that they had. It was more physical challenge, not necessarily wrestling abilities.
I don't say that. The second one was, it was in the ring, but it was an endurance test in the ring. They had to go back and forth on the ropes, and then they had to do a push-up on either side of a heavy bag, and then they had to slam the heavy bag, and they had to do that as many rotations as they can. And Tanner said that they asked everyone, like, how many they're going to do. People were saying, like, 15, 20. I think the max was, Tanner had the max. But when they asked Tanner how many he's going to do, he said he's going to do double anyone else. And everyone got pissed off at that just because he's so cocky. But I liked him.
It sounds like he's the star of the show so far,
though.
Yeah,
he is so far. So he ended up, the average was 8, and he did 16. So we did double.
Wow.
Everyone else, yeah.
So he backed up his talk.
Yeah.
Well, that's even worse.
Well, he said what? He said, like, 30, 40, right? And only did 16, but everybody else said 15, 20, and they only did 8, or the average 8.
But another thing with Tanner, he is by far the smallest guy there. The other guys are all huge. This guy's probably 6 foot. He's obviously strong because he did the challenges, but he's definitely, he's an MMA guy, so he's kind of has like a smaller frame, and watch out for him.
How about the judges and hosts? What is there? Chris Jericho, Hulk Hogan, Paige, Daniel Bryan. How'd you feel they did?
There was judges and there's trainers. So the trainers were Booker T, Billy Gunn, and Lita. And then the hosts, the host was Chris Jericho and Renee Young. They were the hosts. And then the judges were Hulk, Paige, and Daniel Bryan.
That is unnecessarily convoluted. Wow.
So they were the judges, but all the judges' stuff seems so scripted. I know it's WWE, everything's kind of scripted, but they didn't really talk from their minds. It was just reading off a script, basically, which I didn't like that. But
no, especially when you got, I think for somebody like Hogan, you give him a script.
Yeah.
But for somebody like...
I disagree. Whoa. No. Yeah, I think the exact opposite.
No, I don't think
Daniel
Hogan
Bryan's
has
the top
he
of
can't
head,
work.
I think.
Hogan's the opposite. He can't work with a script. If you give him a script, he stinks. That's why he messed up the remember was it Super Silverdome?
Yes.
The WrestleMania
moment.
They gave him a script to read, and he was in
college. Well,
couldn't handle it.
Put it this way, then let's not give him very much to say. Chris Jericho, on the other hand, complete opposite.
Yes, great improviser.
Just yeah,
he was a good host.
Yeah, the way.
But, I mean, and first of all, Connor, thank you so much for that recap. That was quite extensive, but you still didn't answer the most important question. When it comes down to the challenges going back and forth and running up the stairs, were they wearing bra and panties, the women?
No, they were wearing Tough Enough shirts.
No.
I just want to say...
Okay, maybe I won't watch it.
I'm glad
week.
That Dario is keeping with the theme of the show. That's really what he's doing here. He's being professional and keeping
with
the
theme. Well, I thought I was supposed to act like Jerry Lawler.
All right. Now, one thing I will say, you know what would be a fun challenge in the future is they have to lay in the ring and take the red arrow from Neville and not move. Because I bet you he knows. Look, he's an expert. He's done it. We talked about this in previous shows. He never misses. And as far as we know, knock on wood, he's never.
This week, he missed it the most he's ever missed it.
Did he?
He landed kind of on the guy's belly with his crotch thigh area. That was the most he's missed it.
I'm going to say this, and I don't think it's a topic for today, but I want to bring it up now so people remember for next time. Thinking about Neville, and I know he does such a phenomenal move, but I'm getting a little bit bored of it with the red arrow.
That's insane.
And so here's my thing, and I kept thinking about
You're
it.
Spoiled man.
But that's it. The WWE, they spoil us. It's like every time a wrestler comes out, every Monday night, and if they're on SmackDown, that's twice a week, and if there's a pay-per-view, that's three times a week, we get to see their move. If something is as spectacular as the Red Arrow is, and it is spectacular, you're eventually going to get tired of it. And so here's my debate. Do you have him not do it every single time? Or do you feel that you're going to cheat the fans that paid the $50 a ticket or $75 a ticket to come out and go, you know what? Every wrestler has to hit their finishing move because that's what they paid the money to see.
Here's my thing. I'm not tired of it. I'll never get tired of it. It's like saying, do you get tired of seeing Jose Bautista hit home runs? Do you get tired of seeing LeBron James dunk a basketball? Maybe some people do. I never will. I never get tired of seeing these incredible feats done over and over and over again. Is it not as special every time? Yeah, of course. I wouldn't call seeing the red arrow special. Maybe when you see it live, fine. But seeing it on TV is not special. But for me, doing something spectacular correctly week after week is never something to be taken for granted.
But I'm just saying is that you don't know when Bautista steps up to the plate whether he is or isn't.
It's true. Uncertainty.
There's a surprise.
Yes, very true.
You don't know a Washington basketball game whether Vince Carter is going to dunk.
Good point.
You know he's going to hit the red arrow. You just know he is.
Do you get tired when Bachman Turner Overdrive plays Taking Care of Business? Of course not. It's like playing the same. That's probably a better comparison. It's like a band playing their hit song. Right? Now, your question is, would it be more special
no.
if Bachman Turner Overdrive
no, it's not.
Didn't play? Can you imagine if they did a concert where they didn't play Taking Care of Business?
My point, though, is that they're not going to play every Monday night.
What are you talking about?
They play every night.
And perform that song.
Yeah.
To me, every single
Oh,
night,
I know what you're
right?
saying. Yeah.
And that's the thing is, so the finishing moves, everybody's finishing moves, should it be mandatory in every single one of their matches?
Here's an even greater question. I was going to keep going with Tough Enough Talk, but this is a much better tangent. Is the concept of finishing moves outdated? Lance Storm, who is a guy I'm always quoting because he's one of my favorite personalities both in-ring and outside of the ring, said for the first, I think, 10 years of his career, he didn't have a finisher. He had no finishing move. Sometimes he'd use a super kick. Sometimes, you know, maybe some sort of cool pinning combination, flying crossbody. But there was no finisher. And you're right. That's one of the reasons, not just a Neville issue, just Raw in general is so, and the WWE product is so boring. You just know it's, everything is so predictable, right? Especially how the match is going to end, right? So do you think they should kind of get rid of the concept of finishers altogether? Is that even possible?
I don't think it's possible at this stage. I think everyone just wants to, not everyone wants to go to see the move, but I think they have come accustomed to it so much that if they don't do the move, like look at when Seth Rollins got rid of the curb stomp, we're all mad because we couldn't see it anymore.
Rightfully so, yeah.
What if Brock Lesnar got rid of his F5?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think to me, I look at it the other case and go, you know, the finishing moves themselves have been diluted because now hitting it once doesn't do the trick anymore.
Oh, they got to stop going to that well.
Right now, they, it's, you know,
silly.
Brock has to use the F5 3-4 times on Cena.
Yep.
To get him pinned, and you know, pump up power bomb, and you know, Cena has to do the attitude adjustment 3-4 times. It's diluting it further. Yep. So I do think there is some truth to it, but rather than taking it away, I think they're going the opposite direction and they're multiplying it.
Yeah.
So now, you know. And I think this is the point, is Neville going to have to hit it twice, three times to win a belt?
I like the idea of them just being more creative with how finishers are countered and missed, or, you know, or the, you know, even the old someone hits their finisher, but the referee is down and he has to crawl over, you know, and then you protect it by having a delayed cover, things like that. Little obvious, you know, things like that that are obvious to us as fans. You don't want to do, again, still a thing you don't want to do too many times, but I would love to see a wrestling company someday do away with finishers altogether. Would it fit? Now, it might fail. It might be the worst idea ever, you know, because would you listen to a pop album that had no choruses? No, of course you wouldn't, right? Like, I would listen to if Taylor Swift's next album was some prog rock, you know, jazz fusion odyssey. I mean, I might think it was the best album ever, but it would probably sell about 50,000 copies. Well, no, it's Taylor Swift. It would sell like 9 million copies, but people wouldn't be happy about it.
I think you need to download some new music, man.
What?
Yeah. Bachman Turner Overdrive, Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift is always current. Living in her world, Holmes. When's her Raw appearance, man? You know, if she ever does Mania?
Wouldn't even be able to recognize a Taylor Swift song. That's me.
That's not true. You would.
No.
You probably heard, I'm saying you probably heard it. You don't know it.
I don't care too much about it. But the one thing I think about getting back to finishing moves, seriously getting off of Taylor Swift, is the fact that what makes finishing moves great, you go back to the DDT. Jake the Snake could sell it like nobody could. RKO, Randy Orton. It's not the fact that he hits it every single match, but he finds different ways of doing it. That's what we like. The curb stomp, you know, when we see him doing it or coming off of different variations, that is phenomenal. That's what has to happen. But at a certain point, you can't do anything else with it. And so I'm okay with Seth moving on to something different. And then eventually he will do a curb stomp again at some point.
Yeah.
But that's my point is I think he cut it off at the right point.
I think another way to fix that is having each person have 3 or 4 finishers. They don't have to hit.
Oh, I don't know.
They have to hit one of them in a match.
That's very much going down the independent wrestling route, which they seem to be doing anyway, as again we've seen with the Owen Cena matches, which are not unlike something you would see at a Smash Wrestling, where guys just clobber each other with, like, you know, then you need 50 moves where the guys get dropped in the head to get a 2 count. But they're more likely to go that way than they are to go my way. Definitely to go give people more options, more finishing options than no finishing options. But you know me, I'm a jerk like that. I'm always trying to come up with nonsense. Art. I just want things to be artistic.
Exactly. And it comes up with a different storyline. But I don't think you can do away with it, but it something has to evolve, because I think it does become boring when it's the same finisher. And especially, and I hate to say it with Neville because it is a fantastic move, but again, it reminds me of the Dean Ambrose going between the ropes and coming back kind of thing. It takes so long to set up. It's like the guy lying on the mat could have a cup of coffee by the time he sets up. You know?
It's like, just pin the guy.
Yeah. No, just get up and walk away. And walk away. Why are you sitting there, lying there, waiting for him to do it?
Can I bring it back to Tough Enough for 1 second? I mean, we could have saved this for next week, but I'd just like to touch upon. Does anyone remember what happened to some of the performers from the last Tough Enough? Can you name the winner?
I don't think I watched the last one.
Nobody did. It was.
I watched
it was
the first one with... what's his? Was it Maven?
I shouldn't say nobody did. That's not true, because it was a good show. But
did Maven win the first one?
Maven won him and Nydia. They were the very first winners of Tough Enough. Yes.
This one here, just a curiosity, are they gonna have a male and female winner? Or?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Oh, good. Yep. So last year was just the last time they did it. Not last year. The last time they did it was a few years ago. It was just one winner. I'll get to him in a second. But here's some of the names who came from that show: Ivelisse Velez, who's currently working for Lucha Underground. Ariane Andrew, who we know better as the talented and brilliant Cameron. Sarcasm. Matt Capiccioni, who we definitely know as the legitimately brilliant and talented Matt Cross, who currently wrestles for Lucha Underground and Smash Wrestling. He did not win.
Okay, he was on the show
in week 3.
Wow.
I believe I'm sorry, I didn't watch the show. I'm pretty sure there's a reason for it. It says I'm sorry, he was eliminated second. I'm sure there was a reason for it. I can't remember. I did not watch the show, so I don't think it was just a matter of him. You know, he wasn't good enough for the show because we've seen him. We know
maybe too good.
Maybe too good, making some people look bad. The winner was Andy Levine, the immortal Andy Levine.
Didn't he win the slam dunk contest last year?
Yeah, that's right. He then went on to win the NBA slam dunk contest. No,
well,
Andy
Zach.
Levine
related to Avril.
Yes, there we go. He's also related to Avril, and he also won the slam dunk. Okay, guys, stop.
Okay.
Andy Levine and Luke Robinson were named as the winners, sorry, winner and runner-up on an episode of Raw with Stone Cold in the ring. And then Stone Cold proceeded to give them both Stone Cold stunners after. You know, just a nice crowd-pleasing moment because most of the crowd was like, who the heck are these two guys? Levine's fate was sealed when he took the stunner and then just kind of rolled out of the ring and walked away. He didn't sell it. It was very noticeable at the time, even more noticeable after when everyone was talking about it. Maybe there were other reasons he got cut, but that was one of the main things that was brought up, and it was just this black mark. Because I mean, his first appearance on Raw, and that's what happens. That's what everyone saw, and I think Vince McMahon just said, "No, one strike policy, you're out," and that's it. And he never went on to do anything with the WWE. So I hope better luck for this year's crop of contestants.
Better luck for Tanner.
Better luck for Tanner.
He's going to win. Pick.
They better know their place.
Let's see. Let's get to some other stuff. How are we doing for time, Dario?
We got about 10, 15 minutes.
Perfect. I want to talk about Dolph Ziggler.
Just Dolph Ziggler?
We can talk about some other things.
Okay.
But there's a strong rumor Dolph Ziggler is leaving, and not just leaving, but his contract is running up. And when those sorts of things happen, I think it lends a little more credence to it as opposed to, you know, someone just planning to quit. When your contract's up, your contract's up. If he wants to go, he can go. What do you guys think of Dolph Ziggler? General thoughts.
Ever since I started watching a couple years ago again. He's been a mid-carder the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't moved anywhere. I think it was before I started watching he was World Heavyweight Champion, right? He won Money in the Bank.
He has two of the worst World Heavyweight title reigns in history. I'll get to that after, but keep going.
But he's just... There's nothing special about him. I find him very boring. I really have nothing to say about him that is outstandingly good.
That's worse than hating him. Like, you don't even hate him. You just... strong feelings, right?
I have no strong feelings
That's
towards
worse.
Him at all.
Oof. Dario.
Well, then, quite thankfully, then, for the As the Heel Turns podcast that I'm here because Connor knows absolutely squat about Dolph Ziggler.
Ooh.
I think Dolph puts on phenomenal matches. When he's on, he is a phenomenal in-ring worker. Phenomenal in-ring worker.
You're only as good as your opponent. And he's always get thrown up against the bad mid-carders.
That's where my point is. I am disappointed with how he's been booked. I thought with him and AJ was phenomenal, and with Big E as well. I thought they had a chance to do something there. I think there's been so many opportunities where he's been brought up and then all of a sudden cast down. The only time that they've actually pushed him was when he single-handedly beat the Authority 5-on-5, which I thought was, again, another phenomenal performance by him. I think he sold it well. I think the crowd is behind him. I just think they did such a poor job of booking him, and I really hate this whole thing with Lana right now. I think there's so much potential there. I honestly don't think he's going to leave. I think his contract is up in a few months. I think it's just, you know, he may... Actually, let me take that back. He may do a Christian and go somewhere else and build up.
People are saying Lucha Underground or maybe New Japan Pro Wrestling overseas.
And I don't think he's going anywhere.
But
I think he'll sign a new contract.
I think they need to find a way of how to write his storylines better because I think he can be a top performer moving forward.
I have nothing against his athletic ability. He's obviously a good wrestler. You have to be a good wrestler to be in the WWE unless you're a diva.
I'm not disagreeing. I scrunched up my face, but I'm not disagreeing.
But yeah, there hasn't been a single thing that has caught me. He's part of the mid-card boring lineup and it has to do with the booking. Exactly.
Would it shock you if I told you Dolph Ziggler was a 2-time World Heavyweight Champion?
If I already knew that, but yes, it would shock me.
Do you remember how he won his first title? Either of you?
Money in the Bank? Cashing In? No.
No, I think that was this. I think there was one, though, that was Money in the Bank, if I'm not
mistaken.
The
second one was Money in the Bank.
Right. I'm trying to remember now his first one. No, go ahead.
This is, I would say, arguably the worst way anyone's ever won the title. Edge was babyface on SmackDown at the time. This is in February 2011. And the spear was banned by Vicky Guerrero. He used the spear in a title match with Ziggler and was then stripped of the title. And Ziggler was given the belts through that way. That's bad enough. Later in the show, Edge would get a rematch courtesy of Teddy Long and then beat Ziggler that very same night that Ziggler was awarded the title. So his reign lasted less than a few hours.
An episode.
Less than an episode. And he didn't even cleanly win. He didn't even win the title by pinning Edge or pinning anybody. What were they thinking?
Well, first of all, to Edge and to Dolph Ziggler, I give them both credit. Anybody that can do a convincing romantic storyline with Vicky Guerrero, all the power to both of them, because they are by far, far better actors than I could ever be.
Vicky, you're beautiful. Don't listen to Pop. Keep going, Pop.
Go, Cougar, go. But like I said, I think they're, with so much time that they have on Raw, that they're wasting an opportunity for him, because I think when he was a heel, you know, nothing better than the show off.
But what is his ceiling, though? That's my only question. What is his ceiling? I'm a little bit with Connor, and I love Dolph Ziggler. He's a great performer. But as far as, you know, crossover appeal or potentially being a main eventer, I don't know if that ship has sailed, and I don't know how much power was in those sails in the first place. That's a great metaphor, eh?
He may have to redefine himself, but I don't see any difference between him and Seth Rollins in terms of ability in the ring, ability to carry match, looks, ability to get a crowd going. I think he has everything that Seth Rollins does. He just needs, like I said, might need to reinvent himself. Maybe that's what the whole jean jacket is. It needs to be a lot more than that. But I think there's, like I said, there is a lot there.
Do you think he's staying?
Originally, I thought, yes, he would be staying. He might need a break again, even if it's a year, just to reinvent himself somehow.
I'm with Connor. I think he's going to stay, but I like the idea of him going somewhere else just to see, because it's
even if he takes a couple of months off,
yeah,
and comes back different.
Yeah, it certainly made Christian a better performer overall and increased his stock. So if Dolph can somehow do the same thing, I hope that's the case. Let's move on. A little bit of injury talk. We always hate to talk about this sort of thing in any sport, but professional wrestling is just as bad, considering some of the risks they take. Just a name of some of the walking wounded right now: Jamie Noble, Tyson Kidd, possibly Ryback. There was a rumor something had happened to him on SmackDown. Not sure how serious that is. Rusev, Eric Rowan, Daniel Bryan, and that's just the guys I'm listing off right now. Who knows who else has aches and pains? What's going on?
I honestly, I have no idea what's going on. I don't know if they're taking moves. They're trying to be more rough. Like, I don't know if they're taking moves wrong. Like, I can't speak because I've never been a professional wrestler before, but I think it's just fluke that all these things happening right now.
And it could be, and I think it may not be just the number of injuries or the rationale that's happened at this time. I think what hit me personally when you bring up that list is that there are so many storylines that are now on hold because of it, and storylines that I'm interested in. You know, Cesaro and Kidd were going to be contending.
Great tag.
And that was going to be a great thing, but now they can't. That's on hold.
On the shelf, yep.
And I'm sorry, but Ziggler and Lana right now.
Brutal.
Against Rosa. Floundering right now without, you know, Rusev. It hurts me because like I said, we missed Rusev and Lana. We missed their interaction. And a lot of that's due to the injury. And now, if Ryback is hurt, that, you know, kiboshes whatever plans he had for the Intercontinental belt. The other tag team with Rowan and the Wyatts, they were coming back together, and all of a sudden now that's stalled. It's just like this holding pattern that drives me nuts.
Just going back just a little bit what you said, I actually enjoyed the Rosa thing. I think it was hilarious. Okay. When she was on the outside and said, "I love us," and then when he was climbing up the top turnbuckle, he said, "I love us too." I was like,
that's
sat there and laughed.
He's capable of some really great character work. I'll give him that. But how silly is it, though, that they paired him up with Rosa after that compelling E60 segment? Now, I don't know how much you could have drawn from that. You know, it's such a serious story and has so little to do with his on-screen character. But you wonder how many people saw that and wanted to see this Adam Rose character, and like, and then they saw this ridiculous storyline romance with him and Rosa, and they're kind of like, all right, I'm out. Something could have been done there, right?
I didn't like the fact that he has this wife and this child with a rare disease, and then they have him just with another girl.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like
exactly.
that whatsoever.
They didn't capitalize. You know, this is something they could have really touched upon. It was a mainstream story after that show. And then, no, don't get me wrong, I believe he was already in the midst of being paired up with Rosa when that aired. So, but they know that story is going to air. They know how it's going to portray him. Someone didn't talk to somebody else, or they thought they just didn't know how to implement it. Again, another failing of creative.
Oh, completely. I mean, yeah. You have Titus O'Neil winning Celebrity Dad of the Year award.
And you never hear the end of it. Yeah.
And that gets more airplay. And, you know, WWE is very good in terms of telling stories, and they do a lot of good in the world. You know, John Cena and his Make-A-Wish Foundation. What they did with the Connor...
Victor and Connor, the Ascension?
The award.
Connor the Crusher.
Connor the Crusher award.
Yeah. Sorry, I mean, Mahalik, I think his name
is. It brings tears to the eyes, and it's so wonderful in terms of what they do, that they have this opportunity here, and I don't know, maybe if somebody said maybe it's a bit too much to do it. It could be that Adam said, you know, hey, I don't want to exploit my child anymore. I mean, there might be that kind of possibility as well. But yeah, I kind of think that with all that momentum going, I was curious to see Adam perform. And then he was like gone for a few weeks after we saw that. And it's like, and now he comes back as this, which, you know, hey, it's a push and we'll see where he takes it. But yeah, right now, the beginning of this storyline doesn't seem that entertaining. Unless Rusev is quick on the comeback trail.
Please, Rusev, come back and save us.
I can't believe I'm actually saying
that. I know, I was just thinking
I was always a fan. No, I didn't know he'd become this big.
You were a fan, I gave you that.
Yeah, love the guy. And I think he's a really good wrestler. I think people still don't give him enough credit. He is good.
Oh, I said I was tired of... Wait a second, I'm going to say how right I am again. I was tired of his, you know, Russia, Bulgaria, number one kind of routine. And we have gotten away from that completely. And look how much I love him now.
That's true. And you're right.
Now.
And has... Oh, is he?
I would say he's a babyface now.
I don't know if he is yet. But if he is, did I not call that too?
I do love having this discussion because it's such a curious thing that they've done. Like, really, who can root for Dolph Ziggler in this scenario, right? If anything... If you knew a guy like him who had done this in real life, you'd think, like, what a jerk, right? You'd think, this guy's the biggest jerk in the world. And Lana, frankly, I wouldn't think too highly of her either. You know, we were just talking the other day. I was reviewing that fantastic Lana Rusev segment from a while ago. And Dolph Ziggler comes out at the end of it. And we're like, wait, so was she planning to have him come out and kiss him all along? And that means, like, this whole thing with getting Rusev, potentially reuniting with Rusev, was a sham. It just makes everyone look so bad.
Other than Rusev.
Yeah, who, as Chud, the lovely John Chidley Hill explained, he's just a guy who's always been protecting his country and his girlfriend. What's a heel about that? What's evil about Rusev? So if he's a babyface, he's one of the strangest babyfaces I've ever seen. But, geez, maybe he is.
I'm just thinking, looking at, you know, if he's back to being Bulgarian and fresh, you know, kicked him out. He got jilted by both now.
Speaking of unorthodox baby faces, we have to talk about this every week because these two guys are just so darn good. Kevin Owens and John Cena. Another great segment.
The one thing that I took out of that segment was I have been giving props to John Cena week in, week out with his work with Kevin Owens, not only inside the ring, but how he's been able to keep the storyline going while propping Kevin Owens up. And I thought, what a wonderful turnaround for Kevin Owens to prop up John Cena by saying, hey, you know, you're the hero, you're the big guy. Why don't we take it one step further? I'll be the bad foreigner. And goes on to speak French from his native Montreal, Canada, which was fantastic. And I thought that was awesome that he would, you know, it's like a tennis match. And he set up this big, huge lob over to John Cena. And didn't John Cena smash it back? Talking not only back in French, but in Chinese or Japanese?
Mandarin. Which is really difficult.
And I mean, phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Here's the crazy thing. By the way, for any viewers who don't know, I am Chinese. I don't speak a word of Cantonese or Mandarin, so I cannot verify. His Mandarin might have been atrocious. I can't tell. But just the fact that he did it was cool. And here's the scary thing is, that, as far as I can tell you, was not just like they fed him those lines for one night. He told Chris Jericho on a podcast some time ago, he's been practicing Mandarin for like the last 3 years. Purely for the fact that he knows WWE wants to get into the Chinese market. And so he's like, I want to be able to at least do some basic phrases and things. That's why John Cena is who he is. He's learning Mandarin so to help the company. No one's asking him to do that. There's no obligation for him to do that. This is a multi-million-dollar company. They have translators. They have so many ways for him to communicate with foreign fans. And he says, hey, I've got the time. I'm the hardest, one of the hardest working guys ever in this business. I'm going to learn some Mandarin. And then the fact that he got to break out just a little bit on Raw was so awesome.
I think we're running out of time there, Alex.
We're just about running out of time, and I had to jump back to this. Sorry, there's one contestant on Tough Enough. I'm going to end on a terrible note, guys. I'm sorry, but there's one contestant on Tough Enough I didn't mention. Tell me if this name means anything to you. Rima Faqih.
No idea.
Okay. I'll Dario, nothing?
Nothing at all.
Okay. I'll make it a little bit more intriguing. She was the Miss USA winner in 2010. And I mention it because it relates to a Toronto athlete, a relationship with a Toronto athlete. Anything?
Nothing.
Dario.
Still nothing.
Okay. She dated former Toronto Blue Jays all-star pitcher Ricky Romero.
Oh.
During his rise up. This is when everything was coming up Milhouse for Ricky Romero.
Simpsons reference.
Yes, my favorite line. And I don't think it's a direct incident, but they did unfortunately break up and Ricky's skills declined. And there were some somewhat jokey articles that he did suffer from confidence problems after that relationship ended. And if you've seen Rima Faqih, by the way, I don't think I need to tell you, she's a Miss USA winner. She's gorgeous. She didn't last too long on Tough Enough. But, you know, good on her for the effort. And, yeah, just to tie it back to Toronto sports and our Toronto sports listeners, Rima Faqih from last year's Tough Enough ruined Ricky Romero's career.
And we'll just leave it at that, right?
Yeah, let's leave it at that. And let's hope that none of the female or male contestants this year do the same to any Toronto athletes. Wishing them all the best. More Tough Enough talk next time.
I thought of a good way to end us this week.
Go ahead.
I think we should show or play the Kevin Owens talking in French. What do you think?
Fantastic.
Yeah, we'll play that to end us off.
May we?
May we?
Yes, we may.
May we?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I see. Okay.
Actually, seriously, the two most important words you can learn in any language.
Oh, dear.
May we? But of course, answers almost any single question anybody can throw in you in a different language.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Educational.
But of course.
Educational. That's what this program is all about. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Signing off for Connor Dorian, Dario Papasarelli, I'm Alexander K. Lee, and this was As the Heel Turns.
Let me make sure right now that the WWE Universe will cheer the mighty John Cena and boo the evil foreigner. Here we go. John, à Battleground, je te promets une chose, c'est que je vais te battre et devenir le nouveau champion des États-Unis. Et il n'y a personne, pas toi, pas eux, personne qui va pouvoir m'en empêcher. See? Here we go.
These people are not indifferent to you because of where you're from or the language you speak. They are indifferent to you, Mr. Owens, because you are a disrespectful suckbag. You want to speak French? Hell, I'll speak French. Maintenant, écoutez-moi. J'ai parlé un petit français. Je suis un champion des États-Unis. You want the Chinese version? I'll give you that too. Voyez, Jin, Yao, Dai. What's your grunge win? Well, Yo-Yo and Bufanchi